On today's episode of The Good Word, Jared Greenberg joins us to talk about the Spurs doing a disservice to Victor Wembanyama, finding the most likable version of LeBron James, and we fight about Giannis's MVP candidacy. All that and much more coming up right now.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. We are also on YouTube. So if you see the face next to me, you will recognize the face. You will recognize the voice. Jared Greenberg, he's a hosting reporter for NBA TV. He's also a sideline reporter for the NBA on TNT. But most importantly, he is the host of NBA Crunch Time, which is that thing that you were dreaming about when you were wondering why the NBA does not have a red zone-like show. It'll be on tomorrow at 8:30 Eastern Time, only on the NBA app. All the games, all the highlights, all night long. Jared, how you doing?
This is one of the greatest days of my life, young Vince.
Why is that, Jared?
I'm so excited to be joining you today. I've been thinking about this. This conversation that you and I are about to have for a very long time. So I've been gearing up for this for a while, and I've got a lot to say. So I hope NBA fans are ready to. Why are you laughing at me?
That is Jared's way of saying that he is a last second ish fill in because our original co-host of the show today lost his voice, and I was like, you know what? Let me call Jared. So, Jared, thank you.
By the way, that
for
person who
in.
Will remain nameless because he failed to show up today, he had a fine enough voice to do a 3-hour radio show yesterday. I listened to it. His voice was fine yesterday.
I think he lost it overnight on the West Coast. Those things typically happen, Jared. You've been out West, you've been hanging out, sometimes a little too late, and you woke up with a frog in your throat. It happens. Gotcha. Stop. Gotcha. You know, that you can you make it so I can have an environment where people would have come want to come back on this show? Can you do that?
No, because I just want to be your permanent co-host.
I don't think we can afford you. But, Jared, correct. Of course, we're going to get to some of the intriguing playoff races on both conferences. But first, I want to start off with Big Slim. Because a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, I was thinking Big Slim and Chet, they're going to be going neck and neck. It could be a very close rookie of the year race. Not so much now, because last night he went for 31-12. They beat the Pacers. He's averaging 20-10-5 with 3 blocks. Like, someone came to me, Jared, and said, why isn't he Defensive Player of the Year? Why don't we talk about him like that? Because he is absolutely like that, Jared.
That's crazy that you just said that, because no joke. I was just starting to think about some ballot stuff in my head. And I was just going through, and the guys at Basketball Reference send out this thing that you have to sign up for every day, which is tremendous. And I was just going over some notes for the month of February. And, like, so many of the defensive metrics Wembanyama is leading. And I was thinking more so, like, he's got to be an all-defensive player selection, whether it's first or second team. He's got to be. What's going to hold him back is that his team is so bad defensively, right? But I don't know if we're going to hold it against him that there's just subpar talent on that roster and they've almost committed malpractice, with what they've done in his first year around him. But yeah, I mean, he's not going to win defensive player this year, defensive player of the year. I think he'll get some votes, but I think we're seeing a guy that's going to win the award multiple times many years to come.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, well, not that we're going to get into like awards talk, but, you know, very shortly, they're going to be sending out those ballots and asking us what are we going to be doing here? But when you think about it, A, it's only two teams. And inevitably, what winds up happening is you have a bunch of dudes who have really good defensive years and they are nowhere near high in the voting. And for me, all NBA and MVP, yeah, team success certainly matters. Sixth man, a little bit. All defense, defensive player of the year, rookie of the year. I don't look at it that way because we're literally only judging you on one end of the floor. You're doing what you can to impact winning. when we don't value defense and you're valuing defense. So to me, Jared, if he makes an all defense team, I'm not having anything negative to say about it.
No, no, not at all. I want to come back to not having an impact on your team success for rookie of the year, because I think that's a very important conversation. But in terms of defense, like, to me, it matters, right? Like, and the guy I point to this year is Giannis. Like, Giannis just every year makes an all-defensive team appearance, it feels like, and gets in the conversation for defensive player of the year, it feels like, most of his career. And they lose Jrue Holiday, and all of a sudden, they're a below-average defensive team.
Are they still a below-average defensive team?
They've been better from the 2 weeks since the All-Star break, but I got to see more of a sample size. And maybe this will make my point for me the rest of the season. Giannis needs to play. He needs to impact the way the team defends, right? And I don't mean to steer this in a different direction.
Go ahead.
It's going to be held against Victor Wembanyama that the Spurs defense is so bad, right? If you're that impactful of a defensive player, you should be able to not have your team be in the bottom 10 of defense.
Well, what I will say to that is, because there was a point where Kawhi Leonard, those 2 years that Kawhi Leonard won back-to-back Defensive Player of the Year awards, where essentially offenses were playing 4-on-4. Wherever Kawhi's man was, whoever it was, they basically took him off of the floor just so they could get away from Kawhi. They weren't doing any switching. He wasn't doing any movement. Whoever that player was, it could have been a star. They were saying, you are just going to stand off somewhere away from the action. So it made Kawhi's on-off numbers look a certain way. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but he still wound up making the impact that he made to win all defense. So sometimes the metrics...
It's like a shutdown corner in football.
Exactly.
Where they don't throw at him.
We're just not throwing at you. So to me, with a guy like Big Vic, is what would the on-off numbers look like? What do the numbers look like when you're on the floor compared to how bad your defense is when you're off the floor? I think that's the way
they've
you can
won a game.
Impact.
I don't think they've won a game when he hasn't played this year.
Are you surprised? Dude, I'll tell you this. If I'm Greg Popovich, I'm firing a bunch of dudes. And I'm not saying firing like coaches. I'm saying I'm firing these players from their jobs. I think it was a play in Minnesota. They had a fast break. I don't think it might have been Tyus Jones. I had to remember to look the play up. But Big Vic was coming down the floor, like down the middle of the lane.
And they didn't throw it up to him.
No, he didn't even throw it to him at all. He was literally in his line of sight, Jared, and passed him up to kick it to a three, like on the left wing.
Well, they've had game-winning situations this year. All, you know, they haven't been in that many of them, but like Jeremy Sochan and Devin Vassell, at times, you know, arguably two of their more talented players outside of, at least on paper, that's the way people view them. Like they just don't look. They just don't look for him enough. And it's remarkable to me. Like, you know, it takes me back to 10 years ago with LeBron when we're just like, why doesn't he just go downhill and just punish people nonstop? Same thing with Giannis, like every possession.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, oh, well, it's a little tiring. It takes away from the rest of the game plan and all that stuff. But Wembanyama, you know, you watch the Spurs and they go two consecutive possessions without him touching the ball. And you're like, what is happening? What are they doing? It's not only that Wembanyama is that good, and he has that 8-foot wingspan that you just throw it up to him. Literally, nobody else can go get it. But everybody else is so bad. Like, and I don't mean to hammer this and take shots and take cheap shots, but there's a reason why the Spurs are in this position to get Wemby last year. And people looked at Wemby coming into this team and they're like, and there were some people who thought they could challenge for a play-in spot. That was all ludicrous. Like,
right?
This team is not good. They've done a total disservice to Wembanyama this year, the way they've not peppered him with talent around him or the proper pieces around him. They've got all these assets that they're now so dependent, which the whole league is going to know how desperate they are heading into draft night to make moves to set themselves up. Because quite frankly, I don't know with all this cap space that they're going to have, that they're going to be able to land the types of guys in free agency. They're going to have to make some deals, and they've got the assets to do so. They've had the assets to do so. It's just disappointing that they didn't pull the trigger before the trade deadline. It's disappointing that they didn't do something to go get a point guard last summer. And now they're going to be in almost desperation mode, even though they shouldn't be. But because Wembanyama is going to start to get, if he's not already, get real sick and tired of not only losing, but how they're losing some of these games.
Well, the thing that strikes me, Jared, he's uber competitive. Like at All-Star Weekend, you could see him talking about, like, he's going to be got to change All-Star Weekend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's those things. With the Spurs, and any team that has cap space, because free agency is not as plentiful. I think what some of these teams, if I'm reading it correctly, Jared, is all these other teams are up against the second tax apron. They're going to have to come down. Players on existing contracts, the clock is already starting on some of those guys. So maybe we can be a home, a haven for impact players on existing contracts before the cap makes this ridiculous jump that I'm sure it's probably going to make once the new media rights deal is done, and teams are going to be very weary about that. That's what I think about.
But just keep in mind, there's a very important factor this time around that I want to mention about that, because that's going to happen for the 25-26 season.
Yes.
The new media deal is going to come in. But this time, they've agreed to smooth in the tax, the extra salary cap.
Yep.
So it's not going to be like 2016, where this was incredible spike, right, where the Warriors got to sign Kevin Durant. It's going to be smoothed in over a period of years, where if you're a free agent in the summer of 25, it's not like you're just going to hit the lottery and we're going to see a lot of Jan Mahinmis out there signing deals, you know, out of nowhere.
Why you hating on Jan Mahinmi? Where did that come from?
It was the first name that popped into my head.
Player hater. Now, Jared, because we spent a lot of time talking about bum ass Spurs.
Can we just mention real quick about the Rookie of the Year thing?
Yes.
Because
go ahead.
There's the only argument right now that people have for Chet Holmgren, and I just was in Oklahoma City the other day, so I've heard this a lot. The only argument people have for Chet Holmgren to win Rookie of the Year over Victor Wembanyama is the fact that he's helping a team potentially get the number one seed in the Western Conference. He's helping a team potentially become the first team in NBA history to have a 16-win improvement in back-to-back seasons. That's all great. And that's going to mean that Chet's going to be an all-star one day. That means Chet is going to maybe be in an MVP conversation one day. Heck, he might be in Defensive Player of the Year conversation one day, although I think there's aspects of his game and the way they utilize him that's going to be smoothed out over the next few years. But none of that applies. All of that applies to MVP. All of that applies to other awards. That does not apply to Rookie of the Year. Rookie of the Year is who was the guy playing in his very first NBA season that was the best. It's not on the same level as MVP. It's not who's going to be an MVP. It's not who's going to be a better player in 5 years. Right. Because even if it was all of those things, it would still be Vic. But Victor Wembanyama, what he's doing right now is ridiculous.
What I will say, because I think Chet is incredible, mind you. Like, I don't think Chet is taking a back seat.
In any other year, he'd be Rookie of the Year running away.
That's a great point. And that's one of the points that I was going to make. In most other years, he would be Rookie of the Year. I don't think you make the point that he's contributing to winning. Therefore, what's unsaid is almost like a level of sacrifice, because he's playing with SGA, he's playing with Jalen Williams, he's playing with a fully formed-ish team. The one argument you could make is, if you put Chet on the Spurs, is he producing just like Victor Wembanyama, albeit in not a winning situation? I'm not saying
no.
I don't think he's producing like him. I think they're comparable.
I just don't see it.
I get you. I'm not arguing with you. I'm saying that's what the argument would be.
Right?
That's what the argument would be.
And listen, I just came from Oklahoma City and I heard the argument ad nauseum. Like, there's this thought in Oklahoma City that they could sweep every major award.
Oh, wow.
And if it wasn't for Victor Wembanyama, there's a shot that they could.
Look, I'm just looking up the numbers now because I didn't know them offhand. 17 a night, 8 boards, almost 3 blocks, almost 40% from three, 54 from the field. Like, we're not talking about a dude that's, it's not just him being on a winning team. He is impact. Nope. He is impacting winning, and he is also being productive. It's just that that dude on the other side is an extraterrestrial. That's all it is.
Correct.
And, you know, it's no hate on him. But now that we've gotten that out the way, Jared, the Phoenix Suns last night, well, not just last night, but in the past couple of weeks, you've had Bradley Beal out and back in. Devin Booker hurt his ankle running into Royce O'Neal. They got their legs tangled up. He's out for a week with an ankle injury. They're 4-5 in their last 10. They're straddling this play-in thing where it could very well be, and the play-in, guys, if you go and look at it, and this could be Adam Silver's dream, it could be Luka, Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, and LeBron James. But the unfortunate part of that is two of those dudes are going home. You know what I mean? And one of those teams could very well be Phoenix. And last night against OKC, I thought it just highlighted something. It highlighted to me a load you're putting on Kevin Durant. On one end, he's bringing the ball up the floor and you're doubling him to half court and you're able to sort of take him out of the action very early. And on the other end of the floor, sometimes he's your backup five. I'm just trying to figure out what are we doing here.
Well, I mean, it feels like it's the Nets all over again. When Steve Nash had to at times try and protect Kevin Durant from himself, because we know how much Kevin Durant is a competitor and just loves playing ball, and he'll go out there and he'll play whatever position you want, he'll play whatever role you want. I don't think he necessarily gets the credit he probably should for being as amenable to change within an offense and a defensive system. But yeah, like there was just too much stress on Kevin Durant, you know, when James Harden and Kyrie Irving would either get hurt or decide that, you know, there was other affairs he'd rather tend to than play basketball and earn his money. But I think this is the interesting thing about the Western Conference, particularly 5 through 10 right now, is that, and I'm very proud of people because most of the time we take a negative approach. But I feel like over the last couple of weeks, people have taken a glasses half full approach where they look at these teams, particularly the teams that are 7 through 10 right now and slotted for the play-in, and say, oh, well, they're only a game out of fifth place. You know, they're only this amount. But what we're not looking about, and because I'm an eternal pessimist, is the backside, the dark side, is that, like, yeah, you're only a game out of fifth, but you're also only 3 games out of 10th.
Well, the other side of that is this. Utah has given up on the season, right?
Well, right. Look, no, we know our 10 teams, right?
Right.
We know what the basement is for these teams. The Warriors and Lakers in particular, and now maybe to a degree the Suns because of the injuries, have a massive insurance policy that the Jazz and the Rockets are done.
Right.
They are absolutely done. They're not – we know – what our 10 teams in the Western Conference are going to be. It's just a matter of what order. And what's crazy is the team that's in 10th place right now could wind up in 5th place, and the team that's in 5th place could wind up in 10th place, right? Like, so that's what makes this so intriguing. And let's give credit where credit is due, not to, you know, slurp on the NBA here too much, but we gave so much credit to the play-in tournament for creating competition for those last two spots, 9 and 10, to work your way in. Well, what it's also manufactured is a desire for the teams that are 7, 8, 9, and 10 to get out of that and play up into the top six, right? That's massive. And now, and obviously it heightens the importance for teams 5 and 6 to try and play up into home court advantage and be a top 4 team. So I think all of this has been an incredible domino effect for the NBA that now, with just under 6 weeks to go in the regular season,
you're going to have meaningful basketball games all around the league.
Right, and there's going to be a sprint to the finish like maybe we've never seen before, because teams like the Warriors and Lakers want no part of having to try and win 2 games to get into the postseason.
Well, not just that. You ask the Warriors and Lakers what teams they don't want to play, and they'll say each other. You know what I mean? Like, that much, to me, that much is clear. You would ask the Warriors, who would you rather play, the Lakers, the Suns, or Dallas? it would be any other team besides the Lakers, probably just because of the size. And you'd ask the Lakers, what team would you rather play? And they would say, anybody besides that light-skinned kid. You know what I mean? Like, anybody besides Stephen Curry when it comes down to it. So to me, and it's also this fallacy.
I'm just curious how that would have sounded if I would have said that.
I mean, do you want to say it?
No, I don't. I'm just curious how that would go over.
I mean, I didn't. Okay. I'm done with you, Jared Greenberg. I'm done with you. But what,
no, you're not. You need me. You need me on this podcast.
Jared, you have not witnessed some of the hijinks we've had on this podcast. This doesn't even touch the floor. This isn't even like a one seed of things that's been said on this here podcast. Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. John is probably back there laughing his ass off because he knows exactly what I'm talking about. Now
we got time.
Yeah.
We got 2 hours left on this podcast?
No,
I got nothing to do.
Not that long. All right. Now
I got nothing to do.
Now you have a child.
I got to prepare for crunch time, which airs Tuesday night at 8:30 Eastern on the NBA app.
There's our second reference. How many more we got to work in, Jared?
John said a minimum of 5.
Okay. All right. That's 2. Now,
don't cut that out, John.
Phoenix for me. Shut up. Phoenix for me. Losing to the Rockets twice, the Thunder, the Mavs, the Warriors. Those are playoff teams you're losing to. That to me says, I won't say structural flaw, because there is a flaw in the matrix in how they are built. And they've tried to, you know, with some of the buyout players and everything else, what they've tried to bring back, the wings. But I looked at it and said, you need another big and you need a point guard. And they haven't addressed either. And I think for teams who don't have real point guards, that's going to be the thing that bites you in the butt later on. Because I think point guard play matters when the game slows down. And the game is inevitably going to slow down.
Yeah, well, I'll disagree with you on this. Like, I think what Phoenix needs out of a point guard has been a bit distorted. Like, Devin Booker has been a sensational starting point guard in the NBA this year.
Mm-hmm.
Sensational. The issue with Devin Booker is that he gets hurt and he's not available. And I can tell you this as a matter of fact. There are people within the organization that were not disappointed coming into the season that Devin Booker would be their starting point guard, but the fact that they did not have a proven point guard off the bench behind him. That was the issue within the organization coming into the season. Members of the coaching staff wanted a backup point guard, and that issue has still not been resolved by way of trade, by way of signing. And now it's going to come truly into the spotlight with Booker being out for at least a week, right? We know when they say at least a week, that probably means he's being reevaluated in that period.
Right.
And if he's not able to run, it may be 2 weeks. It may be a week and a half. We don't know. But this is the issue with this Phoenix Suns team. And it should be to no surprise of anybody. Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker, as great as the three of them are,
mm-hmm.
as good as it sounds on paper, the three of them have trouble staying on the court. And it's not this year. It's not bad luck that the Phoenix Suns have had a ton of injuries and adversity to overcome this year. It is a pattern for these three guys over the last several years of their history. And it is not a criticism. It is a matter of fact that these guys cannot stay on the court. And when you have such a top-heavy roster, it's almost impossible to build enough depth and talent around those guys and behind them. And right now, the issue is that is not that they don't have a starting point guard. The issue is that they don't have a backup point guard.
The issue is that they don't have a point guard, period. And when I say that, Jared, I don't mean like in name. I mean in role, in capacity. Because for
Devin Booker, we've got to acknowledge Devin Booker has been as good as any point guard.
That's fine,
in the NBA this year.
But that's not what we're talking about here, Jared. I think you're missing my point. And I don't think you're willfully missing my point, because I'm going to illustrate the point to you. I think this is where they miss a point guard. Simply because Devin Booker is better off the catch. Kevin Durant is better off the catch. Having them walk the ball up the floor, turning around, because someone's going to turn them. Someone's defensively going to turn you. A, that wears you down. You're already playing heavy minutes. And B, I want you to get up the floor and have some action where defenses have to shift to you when you don't have the ball. And when you catch it, you can catch it with a live dribble. You can catch it on the move, something like that. It's not about Devin Booker's capacity to play point guard, because I agree with you. He has good vision. He's a distributor. He's taller than most players at his position. I'm saying the best use for a player like him, especially with Kevin Durant at age 35. I don't want Kevin Durant running around screens to facilitate movement for my ISO heavy offense. I want Devin Booker, who's the youngest guy amongst the three. He's not 30 yet. Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal are both 30 plus. Kevin Durant is 35. Bradley Beal will be 31 in the summer. The best use of any offense as it gets late in games, especially late in seasons, I need someone to facilitate movement to where the defense has to keep eyes on you.
We need to stop having this conversation. Like, you're going to make me throw my head against a brick wall. That was
the
a conversation.
The brick wall would actually hurt considering how big your head is.
Well, it would mess up my hair and that would be a problem. But what you're saying could have been the conversation we would have had coming into the year, wondering if it would have worked. And I get what you're saying about the negative impact it has on the rest of your game when so much is asked of you on the offensive defensive end as the lead guard. But the bottom line is Devin Booker is having one of his best seasons offensively ever, ever. He's averaging as close to his career high. Right, he's a couple of tenths of a percentage points off. He's averaging 7 assists per game, and it's the most efficient season he's had both from 3 and 2. So all of that is nonsense. And let's just go with the presence of this, the premise of this.
Okay,
if they were dead set on bringing on Bradley Beal, as they clearly they were, right? Then you're going to try and add a third guard to this mix? No, that wasn't the issue. And I would argue the issue is they shouldn't have added Bradley Beal, right? They should have slid Booker over to his natural position, and they should have added a pure point guard that was more defensive minded, more playmaking minded. That's fine. But the bottom line is they didn't. They brought in Bradley Beal. They have Devin Booker, and Devin Booker right now has proven through the first 50 games that he has played that he is an elite offensive point guard in the NBA right now. The issue with the Phoenix Suns is that he gets hurt too much. Bradley Beal gets hurt too much. Kevin Durant gets hurt too much. And behind them is a lack of talent. And they don't have a guy to fill in for Devin Booker at the true point guard position as a facilitator, as a defensive-minded guy, to help when these guys are out. Devin Booker at the point guard position, what you're saying is it would have been for the offseason. He's disproved all of those theories. He right now, I would be as confident throwing him at the starting point guard position as anybody else in the NBA right now in a playoff series.
Jared, how about we're both right? I will cede your point because I never said you were wrong. I was just saying that there was an addendum to said point. Now we have to move forward because we have to talk about LeBron James, because LeBron James scored over 40,000 career points. He crossed that mark this weekend, Saturday night, against the Denver Nuggets in a game that whenever LeBron seems to have a career milestone, the Lakers seem to lose. All right, but yeah. Cool. I don't know. I'm not sure why that was such a huge point of celebration. I understand the remarkable accomplishment, the number itself, the fact that he's played with the longevity, the fact that he's still this good this long, the fact that he's miraculously turned himself into a 40% three-point shooter after last year shooting 33, that just blows my mind. He's never been this good as a three-point shooter, even I think maybe his second or third year in Miami, but that was with a different level of usage. That was a different level of shot selection. He's taking threes, making threes. The problem is the Lakers are not winning games. And afterwards, whenever this happens, LeBron does a state of his career thing, Jared, and someone asks him
he hates talking about himself.
Yeah, he's not good with praise.
Not good with praising himself. He's not good with this stuff.
No, he's not. He's not. So he was asked, what advice would he give his younger self, his 18-year-old self? And basically he said something along the lines of, I had great people around me. I don't have to tell him anything. He had a great head on his shoulders. The world was against him. The only people he had in his corner was his family and people from his city. And I'm like, what world will we living in? What world was he living in? Because, Jared, I remember 2003. I was a sophomore in college. And everybody wanted to see LeBron play. Nobody was trying to say that this kid wasn't next. Do y'all remember 2003, Jared? Do you remember 2003? Kobe Bryant was trial for rape. Michael Jordan had just retired in a Wizards uniform. Allen Iverson was Allen Iverson, but he didn't want to carry the crown of being the league's darling. The league needed a torchbearer, and this guy had the Nike machine behind him. He had the NBA behind him. He had all these entities behind him. Yeah, there were probably a few haters, but there was no Twitter around. There was no Twitter eggs around. Like, there's always going to be someone who doubts if you can fulfill the massive expectations that are in front of you, that says, hey, maybe these expectations are a little too much for an 18-year-old. That doesn't mean the world is against you. This revisionist history is hilarious. That's all. It's hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, I mean, I was trying to write for Slam magazine at the time, right? Like, it was, and Slam did the best job ever of covering LeBron and
yes,
the culture around LeBron and everything like that. Listen, I criticize LeBron for a lot of stuff, mostly stuff he says or posts or how he acts or how calculated he is. This one I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass on for this reason. It's something that I've really come to learn to appreciate working with so many elite players and athletes is that these guys, not necessarily the pretty good guys that played had a decade long career, or the all-stars or the multiple time all-stars, but the guys that are among like the greatest of the great.
Yeah.
Like, there's something different about the way they think. I think the conversation could be whether we believe LeBron believes this and whether he's being genuine. Maybe that's the conversation, but I think what these guys have to do is generate some sort of motivation, some sort of the war, it's me against the world type of thing here. And I don't necessarily think that people wanted to see LeBron fail as much as we didn't believe LeBron could be what we were being sold he could be, especially when we would tune into ESPN or ESPN2 and see some of these games against him playing against guys who look like worse basketball players than me, right? Like, you know, on a Friday night when you're watching these games, you know, in Akron, Ohio, and he's got some, you know, 4'7", you know, guy with goggles on guarding him, you're saying, okay, yeah, he's good, but now he's got to go up against Kobe, right? Like, different. So I just think it was that. But listen, LeBron's always going to try and play us into this, you know, make you say how much better he is than he wants to say.
Well, the thing that I wish LeBron had played into more, when LeBron was the villain in Miami, especially those first 2 or 3 years, that's when I found him to be the most likable, because I felt like he had shared the people pleasing. He shared the narrative. He was just going to go out there and ball. And if he played angry, so be it. And it kind of backfired on him in 2011 against Dallas in the finals. I totally get that.
Yeah.
But those were some of the best version of LeBron was the year Miami won the 26-game winning streak. They won 66 games. That was their second title year that, you know, they win a dogfight in the NBA Finals with the Spurs, where they had to win games 6 and 7 at home to win the series. To me, that was the best version of LeBron James, which might have been the best player I've ever seen live.
Ooh. Well, you covered the Bulls for a long time.
I didn't cover Michael Jordan.
Oh, you're not that old?
No, Jared, I'm not that old. I'm younger than you.
No, well, I think that there's an interesting point about that. I think coming off of the decision and losing to Dallas was the first two times that the public was against LeBron.
Yes.
Right? Like, losing to the Spurs in the finals, nobody saw that as a negative. No, the only thing was he wasn't going to be perfect like Jordan. But at that point, we didn't even think he was in the Jordan conversation yet. The disappointment for him became how he handled the decision, the fact that he decided to go to a super team for some, I'm not saying that was me, and then the fact that how they collapsed against Dallas, right? Like, that was the first time that there was an expectation of LeBron winning, and he didn't. Particularly after how he handled the decision and then coming onto the stage and saying, not one, not two, not three.
Right.
So I think that all of that plays into it.
Well, I remember a lot of the backlash. And I remember, of course, we all remember a lot of the backlash. It was extra. It was heavy. And LeBron gave the speech at the end of the 2011 finals, basically saying, y'all go back to being brokies. You know what I mean? All of that stuff, right? And I remember how people felt. I remember how I felt, like just as a basketball observer, as someone who appreciates history and everything else. I remember before game six in 2012 of the conference finals against the Boston Celtics, Miami's down 3-2. And it became more or less, I felt like from people, it became less of, aha, we got our pound of flesh, and more like, man, what you gonna do? You're supposed to be great. What are you going to do now? Like, fun and games is over. Everybody's had their laughs. You've had your failure. It's time for you to show and prove now. And then from that point on, 45-15-5 against the Boston Celtics, one of the singular greatest games I've ever seen. I think that in game one of the 2018 finals against Golden State were probably the two best games I've ever seen LeBron play. And it was just a singular sort of focus there. But from that point, from that game, Jared, I don't think anybody else could ever say you're denying how high that elevator goes, how high his greatness goes. And then at that point, if you were just hating, you were just hating. It wasn't even about denying where he could go. At that point, you were just hating.
Oh, and it was people taking sides, right? It wasn't that you just hate LeBron. It's because you feel like you're defending MJ's pride.
No, it was not in 2012. I don't think it was a MJ thing because he hadn't won a championship.
Oh, I thought you were talking about 2018.
Yeah, 2018. Oh. I felt like Jared, or anything past 2016, when he wound up saying in hindsight, he felt like that made him the greatest player of all time. I rolled my eyes at that. I really did. Guys are going to feel how you feel, but I kind of just rolled my eyes at that type of stuff. But then I guess you could say from that point on, it became MJ or LeBron in the eyes of a lot of people. And then you had the Kobe stans who were like, wait a minute, what about our guy? You know what I mean? Like, it became this culture war.
I got to be honest with that. That what you just said bothers me. I don't remember hearing a lot of those Kobe fans until after his passing.
Oh no, those. Oh no, Kobe stans existed, baby. Oh no.
No, I know Kobe stans exist. I know that. But they've existed for a very long time, and especially in Laker Nation, they take that very seriously. But I don't remember people being as passionate as putting Kobe into the conversation with Michael and LeBron. And anybody else, Kareem, Magic, Russell, Wilt, whoever you want to add, I don't remember that being as big of the conversation until 2020.
I think you're missing. I think in part because when your guy is still playing and he's on the downslope of his career, and that's what you're seeing, opposed to you having the memory, so to speak.
Which actually, you know, you think about it, and just to bring this full circle back to LeBron.
Yeah.
Is what makes all of this all the more remarkable about LeBron. And again, I'm not a LeBron stan by any stretch of the imagination. But the fact that he could be this consistently good, I think, at this stage of his career, and I hate when people say for his age, because he's putting up numbers that would be good for a 22-year-old. Right. That would be great for a 25-year-old.
Right.
But the fact that he's not having that downside like Kobe had is quite remarkable. And I think the other part of it too, and I think we need to add this to the conversation with LeBron, if you don't mind me going back to this.
Of course.
Like, we know LeBron cares about his standing. We know LeBron wants to be widely, universally considered the greatest of all time. Like, that is a big thing for him.
Mm-hmm.
He will never admit it. He wants it. He can never catch 6-0 in the finals. So what else can I do, right? I can be the first to win titles with three teams.
Right.
I can be the all-time leading scorer and set the bar so high that none of us will be alive when it ever even gets challenged.
Right.
If it ever does get challenged, right? Like, I think those are some of the things he can do to help his own argument. For the LeBron stands to make that argument for him. Like, he can push this thing 40,000, you know, 43,000, 44,000, 45,000 possibly, so far into the next galaxy that nobody who's playing now will ever have a chance to catch it.
Yeah, I think there's a, I mean, I think the Kareem record was one of those things that people thought nobody was going to touch because nobody thought a player would play that long and play that well, that deep. Into
it's kind of ludicrous that people would say that since the three-point line came in, right? Like, you had to have think it was going down once the three-point line was coming in.
Yeah, but nobody was going to play 20 years. Like, I think that was the thing. Because Kareem's offensive production let me go into my mentals. Post 85, I don't think he averaged 22 points after 85, or maybe it's after 87. So he had broke the record in 84, if I want to say. He broke the record in 84 against the Utah Jazz, I want to say. So basically, there was a decline.
85-86 was the last year he averaged over 20.
And 87 was the year they turned it over to Magic, and Magic started winning, you know, three or four MVPs, and Kareem wound up. It was the Kareem slowdown, and then he became the third option. Sorry to go into the crates for you guys there. But when we come back with Jared Greenberg of NBA TV and NBA Crunch Time, we're going to talk about some of the other teams in the Western and Eastern Conferences. We're going to go whip around for Jared Greenberg. Back with Jared Greenberg here on The Good Word with Goodwill. Jared, do you hear that music?
Dos minutos!
That is the Heat music, baby. Will we be spending another June in Miami? Basically, I'm just asking you, do you believe that Miami, 10 of 13, 10 and 3 in the last 13 games, Jimmy Butler is playing like a madman right now. Shockingly how that happens when the weather starts to get a little bit on the warmer side. Post All-Star break, 26, 6 and 6 with two steals a game, 55 from two, 60 from three, shooting 45 from three as a whole this year. Is this going to be another one of those years where Miami just says, you know what, Eastern Conference, since you don't want the NBA Finals, we'll just take it?
Would you rather me say it in English or Spanish?
Can you do Spanish?
Yeah.
Okay.
See? ask me if I believe.
Jared, do you believe?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's in English or Spanish.
There you go.
What I did there.
All right.
No, I just don't. And I think, like, what the Heat stepped in last year, and the fact that and I don't believe a lot of people believe this inside the organization, but I think Jimmy Butler does. The fact that they can put themselves in that situation again this year, because they're right on pace. They're pretty much on pace for where they were record-wise last year. You got to remember what they did last year, right? Like, they were a team that just in the regular season forgot how to shoot, had all these injuries, had all this stuff, had all these undrafted guys like they have for so many years, two-way guys step up and play good. And then they ran into – they had to beat Chicago. They lost to Atlanta in the first play-in game, mm-hmm. had to beat Chicago, last-second shot. And then they ran into Milwaukee, who just – Milwaukee was going to lose to whoever they played that series. They were primed.
No, they weren't. They were not going to lose to the Chicago Bulls. They weren't.
Okay. But they were really bad. They were in a really bad space.
Yes.
Okay. That's not going to happen again. The only chance Miami has to get to even the conference finals this year, let alone the NBA finals, is to play from the top, to play from a top four seed, which right now, if you're a Miami Heat fan, not only are you saying, is Jimmy Butler starting to play like playoff Jimmy, and the Heat are coming into form, particularly with their defense, but Orlando, Young, can't trust them, up and down. Philadelphia, no Embiid, they are on their way down. The Knicks, and even though these teams have had good wins, listen, you're not going to sustain this without mm-hmm. Embiid. Mm-hmm. The Knicks, without all of their guys. Now Brunson, we'll see how long he's going to be out for with a knee injury. The Cavaliers have been in an enigma. Like, they're just good enough. Like, these teams may help the Heat climb into where they need to be, but I am not buying that the Heat are back in the NBA Finals this year. Not at all.
Well, look, you said it and you kind of glossed over it, so I'm going to illustrate it for people. The difference between a fourth seed and a seventh seed, 1.5 games. Right. The Heat are in seven, which means they're in the play-in to schedule to play, I think, the Indiana Pacers. Pacers are in eight.
Yes.
They can get past Philly. I don't know if you've seen not just how the Knicks beat Cleveland last night, but they always seem to beat Cleveland in games that matter. But The Knicks have all those guys in the Tibbs infirmary. All those dudes are hurt right now. Like you just said, you said Brunson. They still got DiVincenzo. They still got Josh Hart. But that's not high-level talent. You need an anchor. You're going to need a Brunson or a Julius Randle and Randle doesn't seem like he's going to be back anytime soon.
I would argue not or. I would say and. They need multiple guys. Ananobi out. Mitchell Robinson maybe coming back. They need all of those guys to be who they are.
So if I'm the Heat, I'm saying we're healthy or healthy-ish because Tyler Hero was out. Kevin Love was out, I believe. But your impact players, Jimmy and Bam, are there, right? Okay, cool. As long as you got those two dudes to me, we're good. I don't see why they can't make up a game and a half if it matters to them. I don't think they want to be in the play-in, Jared. I think they will do it, of course. But I'll tell you this one, Jared. The Boston Celtics, if there's one team they don't want to play in the playoffs under any circumstances, it's those teams. It's that team.
Yeah, but I'm going to tell you, my confidence level is so high on the Celtics right now.
Really?
Yes. I don't care who they play.
I think the more I see the Celtics have regular season success playing the way that they play, I still have the same questions. They can beat the Warriors by 50. You're absolutely right. I just have questions about, A, the fact that they aren't deep, and you're playing a lot of minutes to Jrue Holiday. You're playing a lot of minutes to Brown and Tatum, who are both young. You're depending a lot on Kristaps Porzingis. There's a heavy dependency on a three-point shot. And I know people don't think of playoff basketball this way, Jared. But I think it's similar to football, where they would ask you about your quarterback. Does he have a tough arm? Is his arm strong enough to cut through wind? Basketball doesn't have outside conditions, but basketball has physical play in the playoffs, where do you have the legs to take 43s a night, every other night, especially if that's your style of play and you don't have a diverse offense? I got questions on that. I'm sorry.
But I do think they have a diverse offense. I think that gets overlooked. I think certainly when they've lost games this year, we've said they're three-point dependent. They have this mantra where they want to shoot, as you said, a minimum of 40, sometimes 50 threes a night, and it gets to be too much. But I think with Porzingis, with Horford's ability to pass, they have the ability to get paint touches in different ways than most teams do. And I just think, I think come playoffs, we're going to see a more disciplined team than ever before.
I think the playoffs reveal your regular season habits. If you don't have those habits in 82, you're not going to have them in 20. Fine. The Celtics weren't even on this rundown. But let's move on to the next team. The Warriors, the team that they waxed by like 150 points yesterday. The Warriors are 13-4 in their last 17 games. Chris Paul is back. Klay Thompson is on the bench. Do you believe that the Warriors can get out of the 7-8 play-in? We just addressed it a little bit earlier, but do you think they will be able to carry this momentum into A, the sixth spot, or B, just out of this Warriors-Lakers line that it looks like they're on?
Yeah, I do, particularly with these injuries that the Suns are having. And, you know, the Mavs, man, like every time I want to get on the Mavs bandwagon, I just – find a reason to get off of it again.
No, they lose a game on national TV that makes you not believe them. That's all.
Right. Well, unlike some people, I do have a League Pass login and I do check it out, you know, every night. But I will say this. This is me not being a Warriors defender, although at times I probably am too much of that. I don't think yesterday's blowout was as much about the Warriors as it was about the Celtics. To me, that was a statement game for the Celtics. The Warriors were just getting absolutely steamrolled. And it didn't matter whether they lost by 15 or whether they lost by 50. This one happens to look worse. To me, it's how they respond, how they bounce back. The tough part for the Warriors is that they're on an East Coast trip. Coming home from an East Coast trip often gets very difficult. So I would say that I think the Warriors, I don't think that they get top six, but I think that they avoid this 9-10 where you have to win two games to advance.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Although I do think that there's a chance that they could get to six. I just don't know if I believe it out of them. it's right. almost like one of those things where, excuse me, it's almost like one of those things where you have to wait on another team to implode. And nobody's really going to necessarily implode. Speaking of the team that the Warriors will face on Wednesday when they get back home, the Milwaukee Bucks, a team that, Jared, you were not very high on in your first appearance on this here podcast. And you kind of basically predicted the Adrian Griffin dismissal. Doc Rivers is taking over. Their transition defense has gone from bad to not so bad. Five in a row. I feel like Giannis is making a quiet sort of surge to the MVP conversation. I don't think he'll win it because there's a stink on him after the Adrian Griffin firing. I think if there's a chance that he can win it, I think that he should win it because I don't think we should hold that part against him.
Being the media right now. You're being the bad, devilish media who's creating these narratives for fans to take and say, this is what voters are thinking. The voters are not going to avoid Giannis on their first or second line because
I didn't say they were going to avoid him, Jared.
There's not a stink on Giannis in the MVP conversation because of the Adrian Griffin firing. The issue with Giannis right now not winning MVP is this guy in Denver who is the best player in the NBA. That's the issue with him and everybody else.
Here's the thing. Two things can be true, Jared. You do realize that everything is not one or the other. I think
black
traditional.
Or white.
I think traditional. Yeah, black or white. Yeah, okay, Jared. Thank you for that. I don't.
But you're wrong because you're wrong. You're wrong in this case.
Okay.
What you're wrong about is you can't say that there is a stink on Giannis in the MVP conversation because he got Adrian Griffin fired after he got Mike Budenholzer fired. There is a stink on Giannis.
Here's the thing. See, you're being a big bad media. I never said that he got Bud fired or that he got Griff fired. I said there was a stink on that entire team because of what happened. And traditionally, that's the words of Jared Greenberg and Jared Greenberg's only. Now, what I'm saying is traditionally, when things like that happen, we say, oh, that player can't win MVP. Magic Johnson, Paul Westhead, Grant Hill, Doug Collins. Even if you had nothing to do with it, it usually means that that's not going to happen for you. LeBron James, David Blatt.
I'm gonna offend you right now. I'm going to say that's a lazy comment. I'm sorry. It's a lazy
comment. Go ahead.
To generalize that for this year is unfair. It's taking away from what Jokic and, in my mind, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander are doing. Giannis not being in the top two in MVP or not being right there neck and neck with these guys has nothing to do with Adrian Griffin or Mike Budenholzer. It has everything to do with how darn good Nikola Jokic and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander have been.
Once again, people, two things can be true at the same time, Jared. Everybody knows I believe in that fat man. Jokic, everybody knows I believe in that fat man, okay? I am a member of Fat Man Hive, okay? We will not do that here, okay?
Stop offending my people.
No, I Jokic is incredible. He's unstoppable, all that. And yes, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is doing things that had this been in a different year, if we didn't have so much oxygen on the old guys, we'd be saying, hey, man, let's go pay attention to what this dude is doing in Oklahoma City. We just as in, I won't say an NBA media because I don't think it's us. I think by and large, it's like broadcast partners, not saying you. But the playoffs come around, and because we've spent so much time on the old guys who are not going to be around past the second or third week of April, that we have all these quote unquote new faces that we don't know how to
conversation.
Promote.
You're changing the conversation.
Wait. I'm not changing the conversation. Relax. I'm getting back to it.
Do you or do you not believe that people will be influenced on not voting for Giannis for MVP because of what has happened with his last two head coaches?
I think partially it's a voter fatigue thing because Giannis won. Jared is done with me because this is
black and white. There are no blurred lines here. There is no Giannis fatigue right now. That is disrespecting Jokic. Giannis is not getting votes because Jokic is that darn good, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been more impactful on winning than Giannis. Giannis is right there. He's having a great year. The only way you could say if this was another year is if Jokic was not playing basketball this year. That's the only way Giannis would be neck and neck in the MVP race. He's still got a chance. We still got 6 weeks to
go. Which is all that I was leading to, Jared. I was saying that his play.
But you have to admit, there is no stink on Giannis because of the Adrian Griffin thing. That has no influence on voters right now. It's all about the positive, not the negative of Giannis and what happened with his last two coaches. It's the positive of Jokic. You're blurring the lines that don't need to be blurred.
I'm not blurring any lines. I think we're having two different discussions here because I'm not arguing against Jokic being where he is. I'm not arguing against Shai Gilgeous-Alexander being where he is. Those two are at the top of the MVP conversation, and rightfully so. I'm saying in the last 6 weeks, I said he's beginning to look like he wants to make a run. That's what I said. All I said. Let's go back.
That's not all you said. John, re-rack the tape. What you said was there is a stink on Giannis because he got his coach fired.
This is not first take, okay? This is the good word. We are not going to be arguing back and forth. You are not my opponent here. We are having a discussion, Jared, okay?
Well, you're turning me into your opponent because you're saying things that are wrong.
No, I'm not saying. I think you are having selective hearing. I love you, Jared.
John, can we put John's mic on? Can we get an arbiter here on this one?
What do you need? What do you need, Jared?
John, did he or did he not say that the reason why Giannis will not receive MVP consideration is because of how Adrian Griffin got dismissed?
I have it word for word. Giannis is making a quiet surge to the MVP conversation, but he has a stink on him from the Adrian Griffin firing. He didn't say that Giannis was responsible, just that firing. And then later he said it was a stink on the entire Bucks organization and all the players.
But that has nothing to do with the MVP conversation. And the conversation was about the MVP.
See how it goes? He goes and completely changes it. He goes from misquoting me. Thank you, John. This is why I love John Gennaro, because John came in with the absolute facts.
I feel like he backed up my point.
No, he did not back up your point. And we're going to move on because nobody comes to hear me argue with you or beat you down verbally, even though I can do that. Like, people know that
your family sends me a lot of DMs about my appearances and said they love that somebody can finally check you.
Probably imposters. Secondly, the Clippers. Big win yesterday against the Minnesota Timberwolves on the road. They have not beat Minnesota. I think it's just, I'm gonna say, a size thing, but you know, it's been a bad matchup for them. Paul George is just getting back. Zubac has been hurt. Is it a matter of them? Do you think, Jared, it's a matter of them sort of cruising once they found their altitude and getting to the finish line, make sure they're getting everybody healthy? Or do you feel like they reached a high point and now they've just sort of settled and now we have to wonder where they're going to land in the playoffs? I think they were top seed in the West for like a day, but they've been in the conversation for a minute. And now they've sort of slipped out of that.
Clippers are my team to watch. Right now in the Western Conference, if you had to put a gun to my head, I'd say today, if the bracket lined up properly, we would get, I think, the two best teams coming down the stretch are going to be the Clippers and the Nuggets. Mm. I just feel like those two teams are primed for it. What I think, and I didn't get to watch as much of yesterday's game against Minnesota as I would have liked. For me, I think we're starting to see some holes here in Minnesota. Bad loss against Sacramento at home. Can't get their offense going. And this is going like yesterday's loss from Minnesota against the Clippers to me is going to be what the conversation's going to become in the playoffs. They're so darn good defensively.
Yes.
Do they have enough diversity with their offensive weapons to be able to generate points against teams who are ready for them over a 7-game series? To me, that's going to be challenging for this young Minnesota team. But as far as the Clippers go, I think they're ready. Obviously, losing Russell Westbrook now for a long period of time is going to hurt, but I actually wonder if it helps him. I wonder if it helps Ty Lue make a decision about who he's going to use in situations where he wants a little more offense, wants a little more dependability. Can Bones Highland be that guy? I don't know. I think we'll find out.
Well, I think Russ is a great change of pace, especially when you consider the deliberate way that Harden plays. Harden had a terrible game yesterday, but found Kawhi on a couple of plays late in that game to sort of help seal it for them. you're always going to have questions about the Clippers until they do it, because we're always going to have trust issues with a team that's never made it to the NBA Finals. It's only made it to the conference finals one time.
And they did it without their best player.
Say it again.
They did it with their best player being hurt.
They did it with their best player being hurt. The best player here today, my man, Jared Greenberg. I really appreciate you, despite you trying to
Despite the fact you were wrong several times. You should thank me for that, for correcting you and making sure you got your head right. You should feel better. It's a good way to start your Monday.
Are you done?
I think so. Watch Crunch Time.
That is Jared Greenberg. Catch him all over NBA TV and the NBA on TNT for the rest of the season. And, of course, catch him on Crunch Time on the NBA app, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Anything
else
you want
to promote?
It's the
best way to watch basketball. It's the only whip-around show in the entire NBA.
The only whip-around show in the NBA, which basically means red zone for the NBA. Thanks to producer John, who served as counselor for this and served as my fact checker. I sincerely appreciate you, John.
Yeah, thank you, John, for correcting Ben.
No, he corrected your ass. That's what happened today. Thanks to producer John and the entire team that worked so hard behind the scenes and had to put up with this nonsense today. Really appreciate you guys. Dan will be back for another episode of Divine Intervention tomorrow. And we'll be back right here on Wednesday for another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.